Hi, Rob.
Hi, everybody. Hi. Catherine, how are you?
Good, good. So we've got the whole team here.
Welcome. Welcome, Otto, Aldo, Gilbert, Avira. Good, good. Well, welcome. How was your week and what's on your mind?
It was wet, humid, and hot.
Hot and humid, huh? And wet. That's bad.
But the overall reaction, Rob, is very positive. We've already started to contact some of our clients and told them about our multi-generational platform. And the reception has been very, very positive.
Great.
This has been the top, maybe the first 8 to 10 families, our top 10 families?
Yes. Wonderful. Well, they want more of you, and so they love that. That's the answer. So, you know, we don't value ourselves as much as we should, and it's nice when our clients like it when we're going to give them more of us, more of our time and energy, and help to educate them and make them smarter about. So great, great. Anything in week two that you have discussed that is a challenge or a question or?
Week two or week one?
Well, technically last week was week one, but so this is week two, but
we want to get your pitch down pat. So
okay.
I'd like to have that down pat, but I haven't looked for it in the manual to see where it is. So.
Well, one thing to do is to is we're recording these calls, and so you can listen to it. And then replay it. You can tape record it off of the call and then play it yourself on your phone, you know, when you come back and forth to work. That's probably an easy thing to do. So I'll go over it again with you now just so you have it. What we're offering is multi-generational financial planning with full implementation of that planning process through 12 scheduled appointments. Four of those will be reviewed. Two of them will be in person. And we're offering rapid response to your problems, 1 hour response, 24 hour resolution. How does that sound? That's about as simple as you can make it. You hit every point. And every word is important, and every word is a power word. So when people change the words, they're substituting, in many cases, a soft word for a strong word. So when we say we're offering this multi-generational planning, people like that. That means it's not just for us, it's for our kids. And then what we're offering is implementation of that planning process. So we're not just going to do the plan. We're going to make sure we implement it with you. Multi-generational planning with full implementation of the process. And so how are we going to do that? We're going to do it through 12 scheduled appointments or reviews, two of them in person. And some people like to say reviews of the plan, two of those in person. And then we offer rapid response to your problems. 1 hour response, 24 hour resolution. How does that sound? How does that compare to what you're getting now? If it's a competitor, you're trying to prospect. Those are very strong. They're short, they're strong, and people go, wow, how are you going to do that? and we're going to do that because we're limiting the number of clients that we have so that we can give you extraordinary service.
Rob, so with that, we have identified some accounts that we want to reassign to another advisor. I went ahead and read to chapter 14, I believe, and I read some of the scripts. Can you kind of, with your experience, can you give us an idea of what script works best?
For reassigning?
Feel bad.
Right. There's two things you can do. One is you can go through that speech I just gave, and they're going to say, how are you going to be able to do that? And you can say, well, it means that we're going to, unfortunately, have to limit our number of clients that we have. But what we've done is made arrangement with another professional who's going to take these clients and treat them like family. So what we've done is arrange for you to meet John Smith, and he is going to call you right after this call, and he is going to take great care of you. He's a professional. He's been in the business for 14 years, blah, 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 blah. And then they're going to go, well, you know, blah, blah, oh, we don't want to leave. You know, we want you. And they'll say, well, our minimum, unfortunately, is this. You know, and they go, our minimum is $1 million and you've got $250,000 and our minimum charge is going to be $10,000 and you're paying, you know, $2,500 now and we don't think that makes any sense for you. And they say, no, you're right. Okay, I don't want to pay that much. So that's one way to do it. You can be their partner and their friend by telling them that, look, that we're going to need to charge for this service. And at this point, it doesn't make sense for you with a rollover with $500,000 to pay that kind of a fee. And they'll say, well, I've got, you know, $4 million over here. We'd like to move it to you. And we go, great, bring it over. Now qualify. You'll get some of that. I've had two surprising reactions. One is, oh, I've got these accounts over here with Fidelity that I never told you about. If I move them to you, you know, will we still be able to do business? Yes, of course. The other one is, you know, I was leaving, but if you're going to give this service, then I'm going to stay. And I'll give you a try. Now, we've had that happen not as much recently, but we used to have that happen quite a bit. Because it was, people had just way too many clients. In today's world, they have fewer clients. So that doesn't happen as much.
So are you suggesting to say our minimum right off the bat? You know, our minimum is $5 million, so you say it right off the bat, so then it's just like, okay, yeah, you know, I won't be able to qualify.
No, I wouldn't give them the top minimum. I would give them your absolute minimum. Okay? Yeah. Yeah, you're not trying to get rid of them unless you want to get rid of them.
Right.
I mean, you're really trying to, you know, somebody that makes your $1.1 million or whatever minimum, which is your absolute minimum, then you keep them, you know?
Okay.
As long as they're paying you. You know, they're not going to pay you guys for business under $250,000 in the future here. So, you know, those people, you really want to try and find a better home as soon as possible before everybody else does.
Okay.
Yeah, it doesn't mean we, you know, it's really a matter of your capability to service. Okay, you really don't need to get rid of any more clients than you need to. I mean, because you can get rid of them in the future. Meaning, if you have 60 or 70 clients now, you don't need to, I mean, you should get rid of the small ones. Okay, that's just cleaning up the book. But if somebody's, you know, somebody's got $850,000, you don't need to get rid of them. Keep them until you get somebody that's got 5 million, and then you get rid of the 850,000. That make sense?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're not going to be dumb here. We're just going to be, we're trying to make you more efficient. Okay. People, as long as people feel as though they're going to get taken care of, they're fine with this. Don't drag it out. Make it quick, make it short, make it loving, but make it short. And get them right to the next person. And I like to say at the end, if you're not happy with John Smith, please come back to me and I will find you someone else. And the reason I like to say that is it's clear you're not coming back to us. But I do still care that you get well taken care of. You know, I'm moving from Indianapolis to, in Carmel, Indiana. We're moving down to Nashville. We're going from a wonderful 4-bedroom colonial, 3.5 baths and all that stuff with an acre and a half to a condo. Now we still have our place in Florida, but, it's a 1,500 square foot condo, so it's small. So we're both purging. We're getting rid of things. And I just got rid of half of my library, at least. And I've got more to go of all my books that I collected over the years. And you know what? I'll never miss them. You know, if I need it, I'll put it on my Kindle. You know,
nice.
it's just you get used to, you just get used to things. But I'm really looking forward to living a little smaller. You know, a little less stuff. Yeah, give me more time.
Right.
Yeah.
Rob, you say in the book that your centers of influence should be at least 6 of them. I don't have 6 at this time on top of my head. Work with the ones that I have and plan to get to the 6 or give them
that
you have.
Yeah, here's the way it evolves over time, but it's a good question. Centers of influence, you don't need many. You just need really good ones. And so, the ones you have now have probably taken you almost your whole career to develop. And so the idea that immediately you're going to get, a fabulous relationship is like saying, immediately I'm going to find a new best friend. It doesn't happen that way. It has to be, in this world, it has to be very intentional, and you can speed up the process, but you have to compress contacts. Okay, so I have one guy that said I've got a great relationship with the CPA. He's finally giving me a lot of introductions after 20 years.
Wow.
Yeah. So, think about that. He said, I hope the next one doesn't take 20 years. And I said, it shouldn't. But think about how many times you interacted with him over that 20-year period. So it isn't years. It's meaningful interactions. So you can compress it, down to a year or two, but it means you need to meet with him regularly and become very good friends with him quickly. And don't kid yourself. A lot of this is friendship. This is not just business. People say, well, you know, I've done business with this guy for years and he's never given me a referral. I said, that's, you know, are you friends? He said, not really. We just kind of business associates. You've got to become friends. I'm sorry. It's the way life is.
Yeah.
You know, people are going to refer to the people they like and trust and want to make happy. Until you...
Rob, yeah. Sorry, my uncle had a question.
No, I just think that the more your clients understand the process, if you can articulate what your process is clearly to your clients, they can all become centers of influence for you. So it boils down to your client knowing, having a very clear picture of what you're doing for them before they can refer you to somebody else. Just because you're a good stock picker or whatever, that's not going to get you.
It's a brilliant comment, and it's absolutely true. It's right out of the book, but I mean, that's smart. It's because it's true. Unless they can articulate what it is that you're actually doing for them, they can't really introduce you. And you hear, oh, you know, how powerful is, yeah, I've got a really good guy and you'll like him a lot. But that's what they say. Everybody says that, right? He's a good guy. Right. I've got a friend in the diamond business, you know. You have to make it easy for them to introduce you by giving them a concrete service model. This is what he does for me. If your clients can repeat what I said about you, you'll get a lot more introductions than you would have gotten. So you want to take your entire process and supernova it, meaning you want your investment process to be this simple and this easily articulated so that they know why you're different. Why are you better? And you want your service process and your networking process, you know, your marketing process. Why is that better? So everything that happens between you and the public should be simple and better than what other people are offering. And so that's what we try and help you with, particularly on the service side, because very few people can articulate exactly what they do consistently for every client. The idea is to turn your clients into your best sales force. So every one of them is a marketing genius for you, a salesman for you. Every one of them is a center of influence. That's the ideal world. So when we give them the folder, don't just give them the folder, go through the folder and show them the brilliance of each page. Why is this page important? Why is this page important? Why is this page important? How is this going to enhance our relationship and make our communications better?
I don't know if this is jumping the gun, but do the center of influences get a folder, or you're just showing them a sample folder?
No, you give them a folder.
Okay.
So they get a folder just, and that says, hey, the game has changed. Things are different. This isn't just another FA asking for your business. Right? We're different. We're organized. This is the way we work. So we have planned process and rituals. We're organized. We're better. Now, I've got a really good idea. I didn't tell you the last one, did I? I don't think so. Anyway, 15 minutes. No, we didn't have time to talk about the last one, but I'm going to tell you now because it's such a good idea. All the ideas that we have come from you guys, pretty much. And just, you know, we pay attention enough that we don't miss things. Because it's such an important, it's so much fun when I have a, when I get an idea that will help you. But they don't come along all the time. They're kind of rare. So, you know, we used to just have 12-4-2. Then we had agendas. And they became part of the genius of it. And then the executive summaries. The clients really were wowed by the executive summary. So they loved the clients loved the agenda. They loved the executive summary. They loved the folders. In the folder was always a page for introductions given and received. And that was fun. It worked, and, nobody made a big deal of it, just a way to keep track of introductions given and received, and that'd be the same for centers of influence, right? You'd have that introductions given and received. Well, one of the things that we're doing, I just sort of said, why don't we do this? You know, it just seems so obvious now. But why don't we call the client and the center of influence, or the person that's referred us, on the anniversary of when they gave us the introduction, and simply thank them for it. So what we do now is we put down the name of the person that was, you guys can go back and do this now, okay? So you have centers of influence that give you referrals, and you have clients that give you referrals. Go back and reconstruct this. And put down the date that they opened the account when it actually happened. So you want to have two dates. You have the name of the referral that's given to you, the date it was given to you, and then the date the account was opened. It's kind of obvious why you want to have both. Maybe not, but you want to have both because for a period of time, it may not become a client. They may not become a client. When they do, you want to know. It took us 2 months to close them, or it took 6 months, or it took a week, you know. So on the anniversary of that date, you call the client to thank them. It's the anniversary of you opening your account, and just want to say thank you for trusting us. And look forward to many more years. It's been wonderful doing business with you. They love it. They think it's great. I don't know if you guys remember this, but American Express used to do that. They didn't call, but they'd say, you've been a member for 26 years. And you were like, I can't give up my American Express guy. I want to be 27 years. Anyway, and for the center of influence or the person that referred you, you call them and thank them for introducing you and tell them how much you appreciate the confidence that they placed in you and that the client is very happy. Confidentiality precludes me from saying much more, but I just want to tell you it's a good fit, and we really, really think that it's wonderful, and we appreciate it. Now, the client that referred you likes you and trusts you and wants to make you happy. Okay? They do the same with the client that they refer to you. They like them, they trust them, and they want to make them happy. And when you call them and say, we're both happy, thank you very much. I just got off the phone with my client and he's delighted. They're going to be very happy. And they're going to want to repeat that behavior. Psychologically, it's very much, it made their day. So they are either going to say, hey, I've got another guy for you. Or you can simply say, hey, if you think that there's someone else that would be a good fit, you know, don't keep us a secret. I appreciate the confidence you've placed in us. And they'd be like, sure, yeah, absolutely, that's wonderful. So you're either going to get an immediate introduction or you're going to at least be top of mind for them for a while.
This is to the client, okay. Correct?
Yeah,
Yeah, this is both the client and the center. The center of influence or the client. The client is the center of influence because they're giving you more multiple referrals. So they, yeah. So that's who you really are after here. That's the one that you want to get, you know, you want to reinforce the behavior. You know, you've given me John Smith, Rob Knapp, and Tom Wood, and they've all worked out great, and I really appreciate the confidence you place in us. Oh, yeah, we love giving you this one. Okay? Well, it seems kind of crazy we've never done that, doesn't it? When you think about it, it's like, but wait, why didn't we do that?
Yeah, it seems
and it's a no-brainer, and you don't even have to ask if you don't want to. You can just call them. And there's a real good chance they'll give you another one. So some people have real call reluctance when it comes to introductions. But, so this is a way for everybody. Everybody should do this. It's out of a courtesy. So this should never be missed. Never. And so you go back now and you look at your book and say, you know what? This guy gave me 3 referrals. Put down their names, put down the date, and then put it on your scheduler, put it on your contact system, and make sure you call them on those dates. Just get rolling on it. And if you don't want to do that, at least when you pick up your folder every month, you can look in there and you say, okay, you know, this month, this guy's contact comes up this month, I'll thank him this month for it. Doesn't have to be on the date.
Yeah.
Rob, this is Otto. I haven't gotten there yet, but where do we see the folders that you're talking about? Is that ahead?
Well, yeah. I can't help but jump ahead because I get excited about this stuff. But yeah, it's happening now. This week 2, you should be calling Cindy Bowie, or Cindy Bowie will call you and help you with the scheduler, and then help you with the folders.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
How are you? Just a quick little something. I had dinner with a friend that I've known for a long time this weekend, and in the process, he's not a client. In the discussion of what we're doing here in the sense of our new service model and hitting some of the highlights, after I explained it to him, I just asked him a simple question. Does your financial advisor do any of this? And this dumbfounded look on his face like, no. And then he started asking me more questions about what we're doing. But I think simply by explaining what our process is, even as a casual conversation piece, I think it's a great door opener.
It's a really, really smart thing. Yeah, it's wonderful.
And you're not soliciting the business per se.
You're just discussing that what your situation is, you know, he bring you up to date on your life, you know, on your business, and you say, well, we hired a consultant, and da-da-da, and this is what we're doing, and we're really excited. Oh, by the way, just out of curiosity, do you get this service?
Exactly. Exactly.
It's interesting. I think it's, you know, it's almost like a survey, you know. Just out of curiosity, I'm kind of doing a survey. Do you get this level of service?
Well, the family we talked to, we're so glad we made the cut. You know? So it's nice that it's a different conversation.
Isn't it amazing? All of a sudden, instead of you being the kind of the beggar for the business, now you're the one saying, you know, we've sort of arrived and we're setting new standards, and by the way, you made the cut, and they're like, oh, thank God. You know, they then look at you differently. And this is I've had some people use that to their advantage, obviously, but they used it to determine, you know, if they had to undercut somebody price-wise, then they raised their prices accordingly. So,
a union I presented to, who is a longtime client, when I told them they made the cut, the board started cheering.
Hey, seriously.
That was funny.
Wow. That's wonderful. Well, that's just weird. You gotta make you feel good. It's kinda, you know, it makes you say, okay, so brings us to this week's lesson, which is, you know, establishing what is your ideal client. You know, who is it that you really want to make the cut? You know, and so for you guys, you should spend some time thinking about that. You know, who is the perfect client for us? And do we have some clients that frankly, you know, we've tolerated for years, but don't fit with what we're trying to do? Even if they have the money, they're not nice people. You know, they're jerks. And so let's take this opportunity to get rid of them and give them to somebody else. It is a great way to change people's behavior, too. Sometimes people take advantage of you. And this is the time when you have that conversation. You know, whatever. People that call every day or people that... You all know what they are. I mean... So it's a chance to determine who is our ideal client and how do we make our book look as close to that as you can, and being, you know, customize our opportunity, customize it but for them, but at the same time not as much as maybe we used to.
So in the previous script, you talked about the minimum. So in this case, the client has the minimum, pays the high fee, but at this point, they're just not nice people. So what's the script on that?
Yay! You're big enough now we can get rid of you.
So he's saying that we tolerated them for years. They meet the minimum, they pay the fees, they do whatever you want, but they're just not nice people to them or us.
I think that's something that has got to be inherent in anybody's practice. If you're not a nice person, I don't want to deal with you. I don't care how much money you have.
That's right. You don't treat our people well. You're not nice. So if you have people that every once in a while yell at your people or act out of, you know, just are irrational or just aren't nice, just say, look, you know, here's the deal. You know, we're just not in a position to tolerate any of that. If it happens, again, you're on. I'm sorry. Love you, but I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I know that, you know, sounds strong, but sometimes people need a good kick to straighten out. And
it's up for you, the front line, to let us know if you have that situation. Because a lot of times they'll talk to you one way and then they'll talk to us in a different. Mm-hmm. And we've got to know that. Yeah, and I think he's right. We'll give them a warning, and if they don't straighten out, they move on.
Yeah, we had our compliance officer give us a formal firing letter. So the team has reviewed that, and obviously that will be the final, point of contact, but we're going to have the conversations this week about three of those instances for us, three of those scenarios.
Good. One other one just to keep in mind is somebody outspending their money. This is, as a compliance officer and a person in our business for so many years, I always went into an office and I'd have the conversation and put on my compliance hat and I'd look at the audience and always say, you know, each one of you has somebody that is spending more than they should, and they're going to outspend their money, and when they're done, we are at risk.
Right.
So that's the other thing to look at while you're doing this. because everybody has them. They just spend too much, and you know they're going to run out of money. And it doesn't matter what they started with.
Yeah. And is that in line with clients who don't trust you or listen to your recommendations? You give them a good portfolio, you give them a feel of what they should be doing, and they still say, well, I'll think about it, or they just don't do it time and time again. Is that another scenario?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
They like you, they trust you, and they listen to you, and you listen to them, and they listen to you, meaning they trust you. They do what you tell them. They don't have to do it every time, but they trust you. And they trust your judgment. They value you. People that don't value or don't listen to you. You know, they give you $5 million, but they don't take your recommendations, and they use you as a bank or something. You know? You don't need that. So it's a time to build your ideal business, your ideal clients. And then in the future, no jerks allowed. You know, just don't accept them. Yeah, and never refer a jerk, okay? So when you're building your network, it's one of those things that you seriously have a conversation with your centers of influence and the other people in your network. So you're going to build this network of enthusiastically endorsed professionals. These are people that like you, trust you, and you respect them as being the best in the industry in whatever it is that they're doing. Whether I've got some guys doing a new walk for me right here in the house. And I'm telling you, they're fabulous. They're the most professional guys in the world, bricklayers. Finding good bricklayers, guys who work on your chimneys. These are valuable people, right? Now, they may not be great clients for you, but they're going to be really important for your clients. And for you to have a name of a trusted person is very important. But you give these guys a referral to a jerk, not good. Okay? So everybody in the network has to be a good fit, meaning they're nice people. They respect each other. They pay on time. They're good people. The people across the street from me, I wouldn't refer any of these people to them. Anybody that works for us, I'd never refer to them. Because they're just, we have dinner with them, they're fine, but they're mean to the people. They're just mean. They don't respect the work. They always pay late. They're just terrible. None of my people will work for them. You know, the people that do the... You know what I mean?
Yeah.
No jerks allowed. Kind of a good mantra.
No jerks. We'll do a personality test.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny, but, you know, when they get on your list of enthusiastically endorsed professionals, the top person on your list, that's an important, that's a great achievement on their part. That's a very valuable list. And you get somebody coming into your community, a new CEO checking in, and you give them this list, you give it to them after you've interviewed them. After you decided that they're a good person. Don't give it to them until you determine they're a good guy. Okay. Lesson two. The other niches. Determining your niches. There's two ways to look at this. One is your natural niche. And these are, you know, you have six centers of influence. Those centers of influence may represent a niche that you had. You know, for example, I came out of the Navy. I still drilled. I had a bunch of you know, friends from the Navy. That became a niche for me. All those guys trusted me, liked me, and I opened business and did business with all of them. Okay, so that was a niche for me. In Indianapolis here, we have Eli Lilly as a company. It's a fabulous niche. It always was. And we penetrated it very deeply and had a bunch of clients there. UPS is a big client. Hospitals make great niches. Dentists, oral surgeons, because they still get paid, make good niches. So you know what make good niches for you. I just want you to think about that, identify your natural niche, maybe something that you did before this business, and then your target niche is a niche of where the money is, where good people are, that you know, they're a good fit. You may like doing business with scientists because you are a scientist or you are an engineer and you like engineers, or you are a lawyer and you like lawyers. Those are natural niches, natural fit for you. And then what we do is we become experts in those niches, and then we speak the language of the niche, and then we gain market share in that. Are there any that are a long time? What kind of niches have you developed over the years, or what kind of come to mind when I mention those things?
So Gil is our international advisor on the team. So his background is Venezuelan. So he, like, I think we spoke about this last time. So he's seen as like the Venezuelan advisor in the office or the team. I don't know if that's the, So he deals with pretty much NRA clients. I don't know exactly if that's a niche or not, but that's been a great advantage.
Well, that would be, it's a niche, but it's, we want to go then, okay, inside Venezuela, it's who inside Venezuela, and what do they all have in common? Are they, you know, are they businessmen? Are they doctors? Are they, what are they?
And there's just business owners.
Yeah, business owners and families. Yeah.
Right.
And the reason book is not definitely a niche. It is way too generic and way too general, so it needs to be brought down.
Is that too generalized, Rob?
Yeah, I couldn't quite get it.
He knows he has to narrow it down.
It's way too
broad subject. Yeah, it's just too broad. It's not, see, when you get into a narrow niche, people then value the fact that you speak their language, not just their language in Spanish, but their language of their industry. And that you understand what for example, with an individual company, you understand the benefits of that company and so forth. In the case of international cross-border business, what I found is that a lot of it has to do with the people that are introducing you, family members. You know, you're from there. You have a long history with the family, and the families trust you and know you and introduce you. But it's also sometimes a particular industry that you become a specialist in. Auto parts industry or something like that. And then you get introduced to all the guys that do auto parts. So that's kind of what you want to see is when you look at the people that you have, Gil, in Venezuela, what do they have in common? You know, were they all introduced from a center of influence? Are they all family members? Are they all people that you met through business of, you know, Chamber of Commerce.
I understand what you're saying, Rob, because, for example, around 3 weeks ago, I went to Mexico to do a presentation for Investing with Impact, which is somewhat of a having social responsibility to CEOs, companies that are in that, are interested in that, going down that route, and that's an niche. CEOs that are socially responsible. So that's an niche that needs to be to explode.
Yeah. Anything that will help them to identify with you. So that it either is a, it can be product related like that. It can be your personal interest that you've written extensively on that subject and you're well known in the industry because of that. So how about Aldo?
What's that? I'm sorry.
What about you guys?
What are, like, natural, like, just throughout the years, what we've been identified with? Well, he's been on a lot of boards, both of them.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I've got a lot of old people who are using up their money.
Yeah.
So he's got to rebuild his book. Got to rebuild a lot of the book. I think some of the obvious things are, you know, the organizations that we belong to, the involved a lot with a lot of the charities around town and serve on a couple of boards, both from the donor standpoint, but also from the board.
The founders.
Foundation.
The foundation.
That puts you in front of a lot of different wealthy people. And most times it's a matter of letting them know what you do.
Yep.
We
write it. I have a whole chapter on boards and building relationships, and you know, each one of those is a niche. And so you can read ahead on those. I've got a webinar on each of these topics, too. There's 7 different acquisition strategies that we'll talk about. One of them is the social networking, which is what you're talking about, which is boards. And being active in your community, getting known and trusted, and it's really a fabulous long-term way of developing business. And some people are really good at it, and they do it and reinforce it. And other people, you know, say I've been on board for 7 years and never got anything. So I've got very specific suggestions on that, and I'm eager to learn from you as to how it worked for you and made you successful. So good job. It's one of my favorite niches.
Rob, I had a question just on my own. So one of the things that we obviously are talking about is multi-generational family planning. So when my dad and I sit down and we talk about the families we are going to keep on, a lot of these families have, you know, 5 to 10 minimum kids and grandkids. Is that going to be part of the household? Do we add that to the accounts or do we butler them? Like, can you kind of, would next gen be a niche? I'm 31, so I relate to a lot of these kids, you know, go out after work with them or, you know, they'll text me, hey, you know, ask me different questions. So is that a niche or how do we kind of formulate that within this multi-generational plan we've got?
It's a good question. I got a couple ideas for you particularly. What we do is people say to me, here's a simple way of thinking about it to reach your minimum so you don't kill yourself, right, is to say to yourself, okay, I've got a client with $2 million and 20 grandkids, right, or 20 kids. And, you know, you take and divide the amount of money by the number of kids and you find out what you've really got. So that probably wouldn't be succession planning at its best. You've got a guy with 10 million and two children, that's a really good one. So you want to treat those people, they meet your minimums. Okay? You see what I'm saying? That was a big, that was a kind of a gross difference to make the point. So with our children, if they don't meet our minimums, we want them to, as adults, we want to make them butlers.
Okay.
And the butler, by definition, is a 4-1, meaning four contacts a year, but one of them is in person, and you want to do a financial plan for them.
No, yeah, all of them are getting financial plans. I just didn't know how it would be with the
12-4-2.
Okay.
Yeah, unless they qualify in terms of meeting your minimums, I would not give them 12-4-2.
Okay.
Okay.
Yes, four quarterly reviews, one in-person meeting with a financial plan.
See, then you really are, they think of you as their advisor. If you don't do that, and you talk to them once a year, you're not their advisor.
Right.
You're their dad's advisor.
Right.
So that's where you wanna break that. Break into that. Okay? All right. I think that's probably enough for today. Any other questions on the niches? Anything else?
Nope. Anyone else have any questions? Nope.
Okay. So yes, the question on the 6 hours of influence, you do want to have a minimum of 6 hours of influence. You don't have to have them right away, but that's the idea. You want to have, and we'll go through that again as to what that actually looks like, but you all, I'm sure, have some of them. We'll talk about them. Next week, let's have you talk about your centers of influence,
okay.
And we'll talk about how to market to them and build that relationship. Okay?
All right. Thanks, Rob. We appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. Terrific. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.